This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable. Changing their life forever so they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hi, I'm Justin Chen, and I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
Welcome to A Productive Conversation. It's me, Mike Vardy, and I am joined this time around by Justin Chen. He is the co-founder of PickFu, a consumer research platform that companies use to get fast, reliable feedback from real people. Justin and I chat about PickFu and the importance of feedback. We chat about his own entrepreneurial journey. We talk about AI. Plenty of insights in this episode. Lots of lessons to be learned. So let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Justin Chen. Enjoy. Justin, thank you so much for joining me for a productive conversation today.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Just before we hit record, we're talking about weather and where we're on the West Coast and just kind of diving into things a little bit. Well, I want to dive into your story, because when we connected, one of the things that the timeliness of this, I think, was really apt, because as I am kind of in the final phases of the book journey in terms of crowdfunding, it was something that I wanted to do. And when I got the message that you wanted to chat with me, some of that stuff showed up, especially with relation to PickFu, which I'd like to get out of the gate right. Like, what is PickFu, and what came to you to decide, like, hey, this is something that I want to pursue?
Yeah, so PickFu is a easy way to gather consumer insights. So basically, any kind of creative decision you want to get feedback on, whether it's a business idea, logo, book titles, book covers, or common things, product design, you can pose it as a micro survey on our site, and we're going to reach out to people and we're going to pay them to vote on which one they like, give written explanations why, and give demographic information. And this was born out of our own need as entrepreneurs. We were actually working on a redesign for a completely different business of a website that we were doing. And my co-founder and I couldn't decide on which design to go with. And so, being engineers, we're like, why don't we just build the service to do this? Because we don't want to go into a coffee shop and we don't want to talk to real people. We want to do this from behind our screens. And by that point, friends and family were kind of getting tired of answering all of our questions, which any entrepreneur is probably used to. And so we wanted to build something that we could use, and we figured other people would get value from. And so It really lived as a side project for a number of years, just kind of, serving our needs and serving the needs of others, until it started growing and we discovered there's this whole need of being able to gather this kind of consumer feedback in a really easy way, because a lot of larger companies obviously are doing these studies all the time, but they have the budget, right, and they have the time to do it. But us guys, if you just want to get feedback on your book cover, you're not going to go contract with a market research consultant and do all this kind of stuff. So that's the need that it serves.
So as you're talking about this, I'm thinking, in terms of not just feedback on that front, but like
ideas in terms of, so for example, I'm exploring like this idea of being a night owl, right? What people think about and so on and so forth. Like though, I think you can head down that path with PicFu as well, I would imagine, right?
Yeah. So a lot of interesting ways to use it are to gather open-ended feedback on ideas, or, you know, a lot of people are trying to figure out, hey, if you're a mom with kids, like, do you ever have this issue? And, you know, getting them to kind of just vocalize what the issues might be, what potential solutions might be, or even posing a solution to them and seeing what the reactions would be. So, you know, just like what you might try to do in person, if you found a mom's group or you went to a coffee shop or a Facebook, you know, mom's group or whatever it is, but being able to do it instantly from your computer without having to have those connections or those sources of traffic.
Well, and I guess confirmation bias gets thrown out the window too, because exactly. I think that's one of the things, and it's a nice dovetail into the idea of what, when we talk about being productive and managing our relationship with time, how biases, like cognitive biases, can really affect our outcomes. So I would imagine, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, not just in terms of, you know, the context of, yes, obviously this would help because, you know, we don't know what we don't know, right? Mm-hmm. We can inform it as much as, that's why I like having a conversation with generative AI. Like, I've had those conversations and it's great, but you know that the way you ask the question can lead to confirmation bias, which is fine if that's the argument you want to present. But if you're trying to attract, or you just like going in without knowing, I think that's a really important thing, isn't it? Like, to be open to the idea, like, look, I don't know, and I want to know. And this is something that, you know, I need to kind of lean into. Is there an area where you felt like, you know, I need to lean into this fact that I don't know, and I need to get feedback or insights from another arena? Can you give me an example of where that happened to you in your entrepreneurial journey?
Interesting. An example in our own journey. Well, I wish we had this when we started our first business. Our first business was, a restaurant review menu aggregator that was competing with City Search and Yelp. Incredibly tough space. Mm-hmm. And we did it self-funded. And I think it would have been very helpful to do idea validation around the, like, kind of the different trajectories and the features that we wanted to add. And that's where we see a lot of people using it now, which is great, because I think the problem is the typical customer journey that we find is that people come to us when they're trying to, you know, performance isn't doing well, whatever they're doing. You know, maybe it's a mobile game and the downloads aren't coming, or they're selling something on Amazon and like the sales aren't happening. So they come to us, and what they actually try to do first is they try to optimize some kind of like performance lever. So like, can we improve the main image on Amazon, right? Because that's an obvious thing. And they'll test like their image against their competitors. The problem is the feedback that they get is your branding kind of sucks, or your packaging is horrible, or your colors, or your product design, like all these critical things that if they had just designed the right thing from the very beginning, gotten feedback, you wouldn't have to rework it. But now all they're trying to do is like, oh, all I want to do is change the image, but that's not going to do anything because no one likes your core offering, right?
Right.
And that's where feedback should happen earlier, as opposed to just like, you know, later. And so this idea of minimizing rework is really what we're trying to do now, because if we can get you to iteratively get directional feedback, you know, starting from like the idea of your book, perhaps, or like, and then the, you know, the tone that you're going to take, or like even maybe the, like the way that chapter is laid out. I don't know. There's a lot of different things, a lot of micro decisions that you're making, which you're either making yourself, or you're maybe talking to your editor or your friends and family. But like you said, then you have to start introducing some of that bias. Are all the people that you're asking your target audience, and all these kinds of things?
Well, and I think the other thing, and I found this in my own journey, is you're so close to it that you miss the gaps, right? Like, I know when I talk about things like attention paths, I know what I'm talking about. And anyone who's been exposed to my work for a long period of time knows. But then when the editor goes, what is this? I'm like, well, come on, don't you get it? Right? You know what I mean? Surely, like, if they get it, then why do you think people have such a hard time asking for feedback out of the gate? Like, why don't they make feedback and why don't they pepper that throughout their journey? I'm guilty of it for sure. Yeah. But why do you think that is?
I mean, I think it's two factors. One is you're emotionally tied to it. Whether it's your own thing or it's your part of your job, like it's a judgment. It feels like a judgment on you and the decisions that you've made. And I know that as an entrepreneur that I feel judged, right, when I get feedback. And so like it does take some kind of inertia to break through that. And so I think it's hard for people to be vulnerable about that kind of feedback. I think the other factor is that you feel like because you're almost an industry expert that you should know better. Like, oh, you know, I've been working on this for the past year or whatever it is. So like, I've got all this knowledge, and maybe that's true. Like, of course there's, you know, you've got an important body of knowledge, but that doesn't mean that you know everything, or, and you know that the thing that you're outputting is going to resonate with the market. So I think those are kind of the two biggest factors. And, you know, a lot of times when we talk to customers, they're always shocked. Like, I really didn't think that was the one that was going to win. I decided to test it, but like, I thought mine was going to win.
Yeah.
And they're like shocked. Sometimes they ask for a refund because like, that's not what I wanted to hear.
Oh, wow.
It's not the way it works, but.
So this lends me to a couple thoughts right out of the gate. Number one, the scene from Ted Lasso where he's playing darts. And I don't know if you've seen this episode. You've probably seen Ted Lasso.
I have.
There's clips on YouTube. We'll link to the clip in the show notes for those that haven't, because some people don't have Apple TV Plus. I devoured this series. I've actually watched it twice now.
It's great.
But there's a scene, spoiler alert, where Ted Lasso, the main character, is basically trying to circumvent the old owner of the club and they're going to play darts. And the old owner, who is a bit of he's basically the antagonist of the series, starts playing darts with him. And he has this preconceived notion that because Ted Lasso is American and he doesn't know much about this or that, that he's going to lose. And turns out that's not the case. And, you know, the quote that Ted Lasso, you know, says, which I think is something I'm trying to live by more and more, and I think more people, is "Be Curious, Not Judgmental" by Walt Whitman, right? Mm-hmm. And so the scene plays out, and you can watch it in the show notes, but basically, if the antagonist had been more curious, he probably wouldn't have made that major bet that he did, and Ted won the game. So why do you find, I want to ask you.
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today.
Have you found that you've become more curious because of this journey that you've built? Like, is curiosity kind of coming to the fore? We need judgment, of course. It helps keep us alive.
Yeah.
But do you find that you're leaning more into curiosity than judgment these days?
Yeah, I think this path of building this kind of service and then working with so many different types of customers has led us to be much more open-minded, I think, to not only customer feedback, but also just open to the direction that we go. Actually, like the journey that we've taken with PickFu has been very customer-driven. So when we first started, we really thought it was going to be, oh, all the tech entrepreneurs are going to use this.
Right.
That's not the direction it went.
There's irony there. You're eating your own dog food. That's irony. Like, yeah. Oh man.
it was self-publishing authors was the very first segment that was super fascinating. And so like just diving into that space and learning about like their journey and then helping them with book titles and book covers and all these types of things. And just really being open to go in a lot of different directions. And now as we're growing even larger, we find that over half of our customer base is not even in the US. And so now we're servicing a huge diversity of clientele, and that's really opening our eyes to the ways that we word things and positioning and like this, even just the different features that we offer. And so I think it's been a very mind expanding journey for sure. And I know that in our own team, we're constantly gathering feedback, both through PickFu and also just talking to our customers and really harping on that. Well, we don't know. Like we have to discover, we have to understand people's problems and kind of go in that direction.
It also, I think, and I've noticed this in my own community as well, the Time Crafting Trust Premium community, the ability to, like asking for feedback gives them what they want, which makes them more engaged, which makes them more, they feel part of the process. That's like, I mean, the crowdfunding aspect for sure.
Yeah.
One of the things I was going to get to is I touched on generative AI for a moment there. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some people who listen to this episode, you know, where they're like, well, can I just ask ChatGPT for this and get, so do we want to get into the nuances here? Because sure. I think, like, I already alluded to the confirmation bias aspect, which means you're probably not, like, I've had conversations with it where it's like, yes, you're supporting every aspect of my argument, which is good, which, by the way, is really good for position. Like, if you want to support your argument or your, you know, like, for example, when I talk about the term productiveness versus productivity, and I input the stuff that I know to be true about the history of those terms, and it confirms that to a degree. It also offers some additional insights. So it's almost like I'm having a conversation, but in my own head. It's not like I'm having a conversation with anything truly external. It's just that I have access to what AI has done. In particular, we're talking about ChatGPT-4 here, is it's grabbing it from multiple sources, and it would be as if I read everything about it. And then it's going, here, Mike, this is what you... So if someone's looking at this, why, well, first off, I'm imagining that there is probably some machine learning and artificial intelligence involved with PickFu. There has to be. Mm-hmm. But also, why wouldn't somebody just go and use generative AI to come up with these solutions? What are some of the caveats to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit there, where Two points. One is that when you're talking to ChatGPT or any publicly built model, it's drawing from a lot of different sources. You don't know what all those sources are. Obviously, there's millions of different sources, and so there's a lot of danger in that. Right? You don't know which way it's biased. I mean, even when you look at generative AI images, like they're clearly biased in certain directions, and you know, cultural bias from the stuff that it's consumed. It's a lot safer if you're dealing with AI, in our opinion, to give it what you want it to act on. And you kind of said that as well, right? Where you input the definitions. And so the way that we use AI right now is when we get all these written explanations on your you know, whatever survey that you ran, we feed that into AI and we ask it to act on that body of knowledge.
Right.
So it's like, okay, so summarize this. You could ask it questions and things like that, and it's going to be scoped to like what we gave it. So I think that's a really good use of AI. I think using AI to generate solutions is very interesting. You may want to understand the problems first, though, from actual people, have AI come up with some creative solutions, but then repose it back to actual people to understand if like that's actually going to resonate. And I think that's the same with AI generated content or creatives. You don't know if it's still going to resonate with humans. Humans are still your consumer of your product or your service or whatever it is. So until the point that AI is doing all of the purchasing decisions and all that kind of stuff, like you still may want to get feedback from actual humans.
Which by the way, yeah, I don't think, I mean, that's the other thing is that we can go down this, we'll go down this rabbit hole a little bit, is the people who are, afraid that AI is going to take away your job.
Yeah.
If you use it correctly, in my opinion, it can actually make your job easier because there's a human touch required. I mean, let's use PicFu as an example. You're using AI to help distill and shape, but at the end of the day, you still have, because you're specializing in a very specific way, which I think is the key, that requires wisdom, experience, maturity, empathy, compassion, all these things, taste that generative AI does not have at its disposal. It's funny, literally this week, as we're recording this, the word of the year that was announced was authentic. I don't know if you saw this, right? And the funny thing is I have a friend of mine, his name's Anthony Marco. We used to do our podcast years ago called Discultured. And he actually did a whole presentation on, it was called like Manufactured Authenticity, I think was the name of it. And you can certainly do that. But at the end of the day, like if I'm using generative AI or if I'm like presenting that to a person, if the, depending on the proximity that that relationship is, they can tell whether it's you.
Yeah.
And here's the trickier part, I think, which, and by the way, I believe all of this stuff is related to productivity because it can help you be more productive and do the things that only humans can do.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that because it's so out there right now, there are people that I've sent an email to somebody and they're like, and it was an email to one of my, and he goes, it's really interesting that AI wrote this. I'm like, AI didn't write this, but because it's so out there now,
yeah,
there can be that assumption as well.
For sure.
So when, again, circling back to the, why doesn't someone just do this on their own? I mean, you're not going to get that authentic feedback, right? You're going to get pooled feedback which you can't necessarily niche down into, right?
Yeah, you're going to get so many generalizations, and you know, even worse, you can get the hallucinations, and yeah, that might steer you in completely the wrong direction, right? And that's what we're trying to avoid. The whole point of getting this feedback is avoid going in the wrong direction. And you know, if you put too much trust into AI, you know, it's trust but validate, right? That's what they always say. And if you're not able to validate it against actual humans, then you're kind of going down a dangerous path. So I agree. There's a lot of ways to use AI, and it's definitely a tool and input that everyone needs to learn how to use, but just kind of in a smart way.
I want to shift gears and talk about, you said that you've got customers not just from the US, but all over. I'm assuming that your team is also distributed, as most cases are these days, especially in the advent of COVID-19 and the global pandemic. Remote work has definitely been on the rise. again, a lot like generative AI, genie's out of the bottle on that one. Like, yeah. Either, and it doesn't mean that, again, like with anything, it's not an all or nothing proposition. I mean, hybrid workforces, I think, are you know, can be played and leveraged both strengths and weaknesses. One of the examples I share with people is, again, as a night owl, we shift more towards our hitting our productive stride later in the day, and because that idea of distributed work, we can actually, you know, have the cadence of our workday be better attuned to the way we would work, which means the output is more optimal. It's better. We're more productive, right? So instead of being in the office at 9 a.m. for that meeting where none of us are paying attention because the night owls are dead and the early risers are like, come on, man, I'm at my most productive. Why am I sitting in this meeting?
Yeah.
Instead, you've got like some balance there. So can you talk about the development of your distributed workforce and how you have leveraged it to be more of a strength? And also, obviously, watching for some of the gaps that you may need to fill to make sure that those strengths don't, you know, get downplayed or overshadowed by some of the warts that can come along with it.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Yeah, so we were definitely fully remote before the pandemic. My co-founder John and I, despite both being in California, were never in the same city when we worked on our things. And so we decided that if we were going to do fully remote, we would also make it a company-wide thing. We wouldn't try to locate to the same place just to make it fair. And so as we started building out the team, there's a lot of interesting aspects to distributed workforces that you could take advantage of. Obviously, coverage around the world is an obvious one, but I think what's great a great thing that we're looking for is actually diversity of culture and language and, you know, geography, because, you know, as I said, when our customers are coming from different places, we want the people who work on it to also come from different places. And so just having that very close feedback loop of, oh, that doesn't make sense in this language, in that language, or why are we assuming that this is the case? That's not how we do it here, or even payment methods or whatever it is. There's so many different things.
You're right. That's an excellent point, because you're right. Like the language, like cultural differences in terms of expectation management and stuff like that is completely different. And to have, that's a really great point, because I think people, you know, when they live in North America, like, North America operates this way, therefore everybody should. And that's, I mean, you could look at your, I mean, that's why David Allen lives in Amsterdam now and was, proselytizing GTD over there, because it's a different way of operating, both geographic. I mean, my daughter's in Europe right now as we're recording this. She's in Prague right now. Like a few days ago, she was in Munich. Like she's been to 12 different countries in a 3-week span. When I worked for the Next Web, I was the Canadian editor, and they're like, you can cover all of Canada, right? I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like massive. And every different city has its own, you know, again, nuances around tech. So yeah, that's a really great point.
Yeah. So we love that aspect of it. I think it really helps us both with product development, also kind of honing marketing messages to make sure that they're, you know, fair across different translations and, you know, interpretations for people where English is not their native language. And of course, we try to localize into major languages as well. So, and then beyond that, as you go distributed, you try to be more productive with your time, you know, trying to do less synchronous meetings, try to be a little bit more asynchronous with, you know, whether they're looms or documentation being a little bit better, so that people can be productive on their own times, whether they're night hours or, you know, morning people. And then, of course, like, you know, not trying to synchronize too much across the globe. But obviously, there are times where we try to get together so that we can build some rapport and, you know, camaraderie. But we try to keep it less frequent and, you know, allow people to kind of live their own lives in their own countries and their own time zones.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. How often do you ask for feedback within your own workforce to make sure that you're actually doing the things that you should be doing?
We try to, I mean, we ask for it all the time. We've we've got a lot of different avenues for it, anonymous forms and like a process for feedback meetings and all these kinds of things. And so, yeah, we're hoping that our ear is close to the ground in terms of fine tuning our own approach to it. But it's definitely a challenge. I mean, I don't think there's a strong playbook for running these very distributed companies. Even the systems for, you know, employee management and payroll and all that kind of stuff haven't caught up. And so a lot of it is cobbled together, as you probably know. And so, you know, we're definitely riding the front of the wave for this kind of stuff. But I think it is the direction that more companies should be going in. Obviously, you don't get the high performance at some of the like the Silicon Valley companies where they're all in the same, you know, the same office and all that kind of stuff. Like there are things to gain from that, but I think you can balance it out with the other gains. And it kind of depends on the trajectory or the speed that you're trying to go. I think if we don't mind taking a slower approach, if it's a little bit more deliberate, going at the pace that we want to go. Like, you know, we've always tried to run in we self-funded and we didn't want to take like venture funding and all that kind of stuff because we want to grow at a certain trajectory and manageable pace, life, you know, work-life balance, and allow us to organically go in a direction that we felt like fit our vision as opposed to like what a board or investors would want us to do.
Well, and what do they say? Slow is smooth and smooth is fast, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the idea that it's interesting because I think that a distributed workforce, yes, there's challenges, but some of the benefits, and this alludes back to our earlier points about, you know, using like prompts and things like that, you get better at figuring out, okay, I need to be more descriptive about this. I need to create these SOPs because I'm not asking for TPS reports looming over top of the person in the cubicle, right? And then you get, so you mentioned a high performance, but we also in office environments, we run the risk of performative work, right? Where we're there for 10 hours, but we're actually only engaged for 5, right?
So exactly.
Again, the thing is it's not black or white. It's not left or right. It's all gray, right? And what's interesting, especially when you talk about that diversity factor and culture, I know when I worked with virtual assistants over in the Philippines, like there's certain things that like they get, you know, a month's worth of pay as VAs. That's what they get as a bonus for a Christmas. Like that's just something that people do. And I'm like, really? That's a nuance for that particular area. Yeah. And when I was at running remote, there were tons of teams that were there that were distributed, number one. But number two, there was an organization that said, we handle all of your payroll stuff for different countries because different countries have different laws and different ways of, and it's like, okay. The nice thing about it too is, I mean, I run a distributed workforce as well. I mean, my Sarah, who is currently my operations assistant, has been for a while, does fantastic work. She's on the East Coast of the United States. So is my podcast producer. And other people that I've worked with have been all over the world, which allows me to be all over the world too, which is a nice thing as well.
Exactly. Right?
Before we wrap up, I want to kind of get into if someone is trying to get into the loop of getting feedback, so creating their own, you know, being more curious rather than judgmental, kind of trying to get rid of some of the assumptions that they have and being okay with like, I don't know this and I need feedback. What is one thing that they can do to kind of flip that switch? Like something simple that they could take away today, go, you know what, I'm going to try this and hopefully it will start a domino effect of being more open and receptive to getting feedback more often than not.
Yeah. I mean, I think it starts by, as you're making a decision, and I think this will take some self-reflection to understand when you're, you know, making an assumption in some kind of decision, but even just starting by asking your own team or your friends and family is the first thing, because I don't even think enough people do that. I know you're going to get some of that cognitive bias, even just getting into that pattern of getting feedback on your work from somebody is going to be the first step. Now, obviously I would like you to go further beyond that bubble and, you know, find your target audience or someone even outside the company. Maybe it could be a trusted advisor. Maybe you've got like a colleague in a different company or a mentor or something like that, where it's at least outside of your day-to-day. That would probably be the next step. And then beyond that, I think using some kind of survey platform, whether it's PicFu or something else, even Facebook ads or Google ads, you know, something to get actual people to give you feedback on your decisions, I think would be the last step.
It's interesting. You mentioned getting thoughts from family and friends. My family and friends, when they what does Mike do? They're like, I don't know. Like, I've said, yeah, I'm a writer, I'm this, I'm that. I'm at the point now where I just say, you know, like, I am a time theorist at this point. Like, right? Yeah. Like, I present that, you know, I have my, but there's so many things. But it's interesting. I think one of the things I end up spending more time doing in the community that I host, of course, but also I have had conversations with generative AI because, number one, it doesn't get bored with my conversation points. And number two, it does give me that outlet. And I think that that's a huge key, right? Is when you're asking for feedback, it's not if you come at it from a vantage point of I need an outlet to figure things out as opposed to I need to ask because I'm not sure. I think if you can, because then I think you're giving the ego a bit of a break, right? Because the ego is the thing that's going to keep us from going, like, because it's the thing that knows and the one that lives in fear. But if you're like, I need an outlet and feedback is the outlet, I think maybe is that may be the key to unlocking your willingness to do it, right? And then when you've got a tool like PicFu, the less friction, right? There's less friction to do it, right? So, yeah. Justin, this has been a great conversation. Thanks so much for taking the time. Where can people keep up with you and learn more about what PicFu has to offer?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can search for Justin Chen. Happy to connect there. You can definitely learn more about PicFu at picfu.com, PICKFU.com. And we've got, it's all self-service, free to sign up for an account. And we've got a very helpful customer success team that can hop on a call or live chat with you if you have any questions about getting into this habit. And it is a habit that we try to instill. You know, it's all about building the habit for gathering feedback. And we'd rather you get smaller, more frequent feedback than just like, a lot of people tend to wait till the very end. And this is kind of like the traditional market research approach. Like, hey, we're going to run this giant study at the end, you know, and maybe it becomes like the Peloton ad. I don't even know if they ever, you know, ran feedback on some of these things or like new Coke or new Pepsi or whatever it is. Like there's so many things that have flopped.
Oh, new Coke one. Didn't. Neither did Crystal Pepsi. Neither of them did it.
So it's kind of crazy when you see these things happen in public and you wonder, you know, did they have the resources? Did they even get the feedback?
Yeah. Again, this is a good example of iterative is better than you know, incidental.
Exactly.
Justin, thanks so much for taking the time today to have a productive conversation with me.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks to Justin for joining me on this episode. You can find all of the relevant links and helpful feedback and show notes and all that stuff. And we know feedback's important at productivityist.com/podcast506. That's the episode we're on right now. Speaking of feedback, I'd love to get your feedback. Leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts regarding this episode, regarding the podcast in general. That's how we get better each and every week. Another way to support the show, of course, is to check out the sponsors you heard during today's conversation. You can go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors to make that happen. That's it for this episode of A Productive Conversation. Until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.